up next is your evening news. KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from Levin & Levine, LLP, attorneys specializing in personal injury law. Levin & Levine offices are located in Southeast Portland and Old Town Sherwood. More information available by phone at 503-946-8708 and online at levinandlevine.com. KBOO is an independent, member-supported, non-commercial, volunteer-powered community radio station. By making a donation through the Give Guide on kboo.fm/give, you're eligible for more than $4,000 worth of free and discounted products from your favorite brands.
KBOO Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Crackpots Holiday Pop-Up in St. John's. Open Thursday through Sunday, noon to 7 p.m., through Sunday, December 22nd, at the former Bank of America building in North Portland. The Cracked Pots pop-up shop features 50 local upcycling artists and many curated items rescued from the waste stream by Reclaim It. Again, that's the Cracked Pots holiday pop-up in St. John's, Thursday through Sunday, noon to 7 p.m., through Sunday, December 22nd, at the former Bank of America building, 7410 North Chicago Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Dr. Zom Stereo Obscura. Offbeat sounds for talented listeners. Broadcasts every other Wednesday at 10 p.m.
There was heaven and there was earth.
Después de esa pieza, vamos a escuchar una comunicación simpática y cruel con Annie.
That's Dr. Zom's Stereo Obscura. Every other Wednesday from 10 to midnight, here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, impeachment rallies took place across the country last night.
A portion of the Affordable Care Act has been ruled unconstitutional.
And in international news, India bans protesting in a move considered to openly discriminate against Muslims.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, December 18, 2019. I'm Nat Moon.
And I'm Aaron J. Bernard. The jury, or shall we say the House of Representatives, is still out on whether President Donald Trump will be impeached. As of about 4:30 today, representatives are concluding the impeachment hearing, which has been underway for the past 10 or so hours. Today's hearing began with Republican procedural arguments, which were quickly put aside. Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi said early in the morning, quote, "It is tragic that the president's reckless actions make impeachment necessary. He gave us no choice," end quote. If impeached, Trump will join Andrew Johnson and Bill Clinton as the third U.S. president to be impeached.
Pro-impeachment rallies were held in nearly every state last night, drawing over 200,000 demonstrators. In Portland, 600 people showed up downtown on the banks of the Willamette to call for President Trump's impeachment and removal. KBOO's Teresa Mitchell interviewed some of the participants.
The crowd is yelling, "Throw him out!
Thank you. brings you here, and what effect do you think it will have to impeach Trump?
I don't know if it'll have any effect on that, because they don't listen, and they've made it clear and obvious that they care not, and they're not listening and making stuff up. What this is for is to show that we're not going to take it. I believe what Donald Trump is doing right now is right out of the book of the Nazi rise to power. How they got into power was creating an enemy and convincing enough people that they were the enemy and they were the saviors. And that's exactly what he's doing now. What he did today to Pelosi, that letter calling all people who are against him traitors and treasonous, that's a call to arms for his people. So this is an answer to that call. Show him. There's, I don't know if you saw the New York protests, or I haven't heard about Washington. There's millions of people in New York. I saw it on YouTube. This is showing him that it's not going to be as easy. The centrists and the moderates in Germany in 1929 and 30, they kept convincing themselves, oh, it'll all work themselves out. Even the anti-Nazis, they were like, oh, it'll work it out. Yeah, well, it did work out, not very well. So I think we have to learn from that like he learned from that. And we have to say, no, we're not going to lay down and let you make everyone afraid. We have to stand up now. This is the line in the sand, and I'm here. And I got a bad knee, and I have IBS, and I had to take a bus, and I came here. You know, it's not easy for me to leave the house on a cold night when I don't have to work and get on a bus.
So it means something to you. So if I understand you correctly, you're saying that this is similar to the way one is recommended to confront a bully, whether one wins or not in a fight with the bully. You have to fight the bully every time. Is that a good metaphor?
And not only fight him, but if you remember, there was a bunch of young anti-Nazis who got criminalized because they said, see, they're wild in the street, like the Antifa, like some of the more violent people. That was, and they turned people against them. They made more Nazi sympathizers that way. We're doing it peacefully. We're saying, no, we're here, we're not going away, we're not moving, and we're not going to acquiesce to your agenda, no matter what. And we're saying it now, and we're saying it peacefully. Try to make, and he'll do his best to make villains of us. He will do his best, but he's a villain. He's a gaslighter. So what are you going to do? We have to let America know that a third of us are not going away.
Do you want to give a name?
My name? Seth?
Okay, thank you, Seth. Do you have opinions about the impeachment process?
I'm against it.
Against the impeachment process? Yeah. Can I ask you what brings y'all down here tonight?
Well, we're urging our elected officials to do their job.
I see that there's a lot of support for people coming by and honking.
Yeah, isn't that great?
What do you think that the Senate will do when they are presented with the trial? Do you think that they will have a full trial, or that they will try to make it quick, over, and easy?
Well, if you listen to McConnell, he says, and Lindsey Graham, they're not going to do anything. They're not going to have any witnesses. They're not going to have nothing. They're just going to get it done with as fast as they can.
Do you think that Pelosi should withhold the actual vote for impeachment in order to get acquiescence with the trial?
Can that happen?
That's being talked about.
I think that makes a lot of sense, because it's not like it expires in 2020. I have to use air quotes, and I know you can't see them, but if he is reelected, which I don't think he was ever elected in the first place, but if he's reelected, then we need to definitely get him out before the end of the second term.
There's talk about going to a secret ballot, because it is believed that some Republican senators are so furious at Trump that if they are not called on it, if they could do so secretly, then they would vote to remove him. What do you think of that tactic?
That sounds like a great idea, because they're scared.
Scared shotless, you say. Scared shirtless. Thanks very much. Did you want to give your names?
Spike Sandberg Lewis.
Steven Sandberg Lewis.
I see you brought an American flag. What's it mean to you?
Well, it means that the other side doesn't get to take patriotism from us. That as flawed as it might be, our Constitution is a great and important document, and we need to make sure that when it's threatened, as it's threatened right now, we the people make our voices heard that we are going to stand for it.
Your sign says, "Protect the Constitution, impeach and remove." Any comment?
You cannot ask for a state for a situation than the one that we're in right now, that is more clearly defined in the Constitution as something that we should remove the president for. if the Senate doesn't remove Donald Trump, the Senate is simply not doing their job.
Your name?
Ben Newman.
For KBOO Portland, I'm Teresa Mitchell.
Multnomah County's Department of Human Services announced today an $85,000 grant from the Meyer Memorial Trust that will support a new program called Preschool for All. The program is part of an initiative that aims to bring universal preschool to Multnomah County's 3- and 4-year-old population. The Preschool for All Coalition convened in 2018 and includes community leaders, community members, and community-based organizations calling for the expansion of affordable and high-quality preschool opportunities, especially for communities that have the least access to preschool. Research has shown the importance of early childhood education, but Oregon is the 4th least affordable state when it comes to preschool. Currently, only 15% of 3- and 4-year-olds in Multnomah County have access to publicly funded preschool. Commissioner Jessica Vega Peterson said earlier today, quote, "Every child in our community deserves the chance to succeed, and we all know that education opens the door to opportunity. Creating preschool options that give every child an equal start is simply one of the best investments we can make as a community."
According to Oregon state law, it's forbidden to park within 20 feet of a crosswalk. But as many pedestrians around town have noticed, there seems to be an exception in Portland. This is due to an Oregon law giving individuals, cities, road authority, which allows them to choose which parking rules to enforce and which to not enforce. Portland Bureau of Transportation has committed to Vision Zero, the city's policy to eliminate traffic deaths, but refuses to make all intersections safer for pedestrians, cyclists, and drivers by painting yellow lines prohibiting parking within 20 feet of the intersection. PBOT has launched an online request process in which residents can report intersections with limited visibility. But injury lawyer Scott Coker calls this a, quote, feeble half measure. National studies have shown that corners without parked cars within 20 feet, called daylight corners, are safer for everyone involved. As cyclist Jonathan Moss pointed out, quote, "When you're in a car and trying to creep out and you can't see around another parked car, you pretty much have to enter the cross street in order to see. That puts you and others at risk." Critics worry that daylighting all corners in Portland will make parking in the city even more difficult.
Yesterday, a federal bankruptcy judge approved 2 Pacific Gas and Electric settlements totaling over $24 billion. The settlements are meant to help pay for the losses suffered by homeowners and businesses from the catastrophic Northern California wildfires that the utility is considered liable for. But PG&E still have several other obstacles in its way to get out of bankruptcy by a June 30th deadline. A significant one is California Governor Gavin Newsom's recent conclusion that PG&E's plan doesn't comply with state law, which the company must do to qualify for coverage by a state legislature-approved wildfire fund. PG&E sought refuge in bankruptcy in January as it faced $36 billion in claims from people who lost homes, businesses, and family members in those fires. Also yesterday, California regulators announced a proposed $1.7 billion settlement to punish the utility for sparking the fires in 2017 and 2018.
A federal court in New Orleans today ruled part of the Affordable Care Act unconstitutional. The portion deemed unconstitutional is the mandate that forces individuals to purchase insurance, though the court declined to rule on whether the Affordable Care Act itself should be repealed. At the time the Affordable Care Act passed, insurers, state regulators, and others who had something to gain believed that unless there was a penalty for going uninsured, younger and healthier people would not buy health plans until they got sick, leading insurance markets to collapse. The penalty itself was crucial for the healthcare law's survival when it came before the Supreme Court in 2012, since the penalty could be considered a tax. However, the federal penalty has already been abolished, which is why the mandate requiring individuals to purchase insurance is no longer constitutional. As Judge Carolyn Deneen King said today after the ruling, quote, "People can purchase insurance, or not, as they please. No more need be said."
after 21 people were injured and buses and a police outpost set alight yesterday in New Delhi. Police declared emergency measures to prevent the gathering of more than four people in certain Muslim-dominated areas of the city. Some of the most violent altercations between protesters and police have occurred on Muslim-majority university campuses, where protesters of the citizenship law were met with police brutality. Various parts of India have seen protests since last week's passage of legislation that will allow tens of thousands of migrants from Bangladesh, Pakistan, and Afghanistan to claim Indian citizenship as long as they are not Muslim. In the northeastern state of Assam, where protests first began last week and where six protesters have died so far, thousands of government employees took to the streets. While the ruling BJP government has denied that the new law discriminates against Muslims, critics say it's their most explicit attempt yet to forward their Hindu nationalist agenda and divide the country down religious lines.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Culture in Motion with Mick Crenshaw. At 6, it's Rural Roots Rising. At 6:30, it's Free Culture Radio. Then at 7, we have Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather is a 100% chance of rain with a low of 41. Tomorrow's weather will be even rainier with a high of 53. Heavy rains with snow at higher altitudes are expected through Saturday. Today in history, in 1865, slavery was abolished in the United States with the adoption of the 13th Amendment. The amendment ensured that, quote, neither slavery nor involuntary servitude shall exist within the United States or any place subject to their jurisdiction. The quote of the day is from Rolling Stones guitarist and actor Keith Richards, whose 76th birthday is also today. If you're going to kick authority in the teeth, you might as well use both feet.
KBOO News poet Dan Raphael thought this was the season of giving. To that audio in just a minute. Australia has drought, brush fires burning since August, and yesterday was its hottest day ever with an average temperature of 105.6 degrees Fahrenheit. Note that's the average temperature, with many places clocking in several degrees hotter. And summer's just about to begin. Meanwhile, an unusually heavy monsoon season has caused record flooding in India. Until rains come, Australia will continue to heat up, and the fires, which have destroyed more homes than any other year, will keep burning. The driving force behind this is climate change, said former Fire and Rescue Commissioner Greg Mullins. In our decades of service, we've seen Australia become drier, hotter, and extreme weather conditions far more severe.
Congress on Tuesday approved federal recognition of the Little Shell Tribe of Chippewa Indians, an historic moment after more than a century of petitioning for the status. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News, the daily newscast dedicated to Indigenous news, issues, and culture.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A historic move for the Little Shell Tribe of Chippewa Indians. On Tuesday, the U.S. Senate passed the National Defense Spending Bill, and with it, federal recognition for the tribe. Yellowstone Public Radio's Nikki Ouellette reports.
This time last year, 99 senators voted to fast-track a bill recognizing the Little Shell as a sovereign nation. A single nay vote tanked the effort.
And it was really painful to watch, you know, for example, last year, the Virginia tribes got recognized and we didn't, and we were in the same fight with them, if not longer.
Gerald Gray is the Little Shell's tribal chairman. The tribe has petitioned the government for more than a century.
I was going to be the squeaky wheel that got the grease until this is done and over the finish line. And it's finally happened.
On Tuesday, by a vote of 86-8, the Senate passed the Little Shell's recognition as part of the National Defense Authorization Act, With recognition comes federal funding for health care, education, and economic development, a 200-acre land base, and the ability for the Little Shell to self-govern on their lands. Gray calls the passage one of the most historic days for his tribe.
I'm almost speechless that this has finally come to fruition for us.
On a press call with reporters Tuesday, Montana Senator John Tester said the tribe will soon be able to work with federal agencies to designate a land base and access other resources earmarked for sovereign tribes.
I think the big thing is we got the recognition done. Now we can sit down and have a conversation with the tribe, with Interior, and determine what's possible out there.
Senator Steve Daines, Congressman Greg Gianforte, and Governor Steve Bullock also applauded Tuesday's vote. The Montana legislature voted to recognize the Little Shell in 2000. The tribe counts about 4,500 members and is headquartered in Great Falls. President Donald Trump is expected to sign the bill before government funding expires on Friday. For National Native News, I'm Nikki Ouellette.
This week, the South Dakota Water Management Board is hearing 4 more days of testimony on water permits for construction of the Keystone XL pipeline. The board heard 5 days of testimony in October and is still hearing from the applicant's witnesses. When that process is finished, opponents will make their case asserting tribal water rights under the Winters Doctrine. Victoria Wicks has this report on the latest round of hearings, which started Tuesday.
TC Energy's first witness is Jung Ho Hopgood, a Florida engineer called in October to testify about the Cheyenne River and again in December to testify about the White and Bad Rivers. Under questioning from TC attorney Bill Taylor, Hopgood says water quantity is sufficient for use in pipeline construction without depriving downstream users.
Do you have an opinion whether or not the appropriation by TransCanada at the point of diversion would impair downstream users?
Yes, I do.
And what is that opinion?
It would not impair any downstream rights holders.
Pipeline opponents disagree. Through cross-examination, they establish that Hopgood considered downstream rights by looking only at DENR permit holders and did not include tribes or individual families. Dakota Rural Action attorney Patricia Handlin points out that DENR does not require a permit for about 26,000 gallons of water per day for certain purposes.
Farm or ranch use? Livestock watering, individual household use for drinking, washing, sanitary, culinary, other household purposes, and irrigation of a non-commercial family garden.
Hopgood contends that use by individual households would not have much effect on quantity. He also says he did not consider tribal water rights or the Winters Doctrine because no tribes have applied to DENR for permits. Testimony continues through the end of the week. For National Native News, I'm Victoria Wicks in Rapid City, South Dakota.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
The Trump administration is making a last-ditch effort to remove protections on one of the only remaining temperate rainforests in Alaska, an attempt that would allow logging and road construction in an area that benefits public health, safety, and the environment. Andrea Sears has more on the story.
The roadless rule protects almost 60 million acres of national forests from road construction and logging, but the Trump administration wants a big exemption. The administration has asked the Forest Service to create an exemption that would allow logging in protected parts of the Tongass National Forest in Alaska, one of the largest intact temperate rainforests left in the world. In Pennsylvania, Jim Furnish, former deputy chief of the U.S. Forest Service, notes the roadless rule also protects 25,000 acres of the Allegheny National Forest from logging.
I think if people look at what value the Allegheny has in Pennsylvania as being a place that's been set aside for future generations, for posterity, it's a great lesson.
Supporters of the exemption claim it would allow timber harvest, road construction, and roadless area management decisions to be made by local officials on a case-by-case basis. Conservation groups point out that from capturing carbon to supporting recreation, forests benefit public health and safety. Furnish adds that when roads are built in national forests, taxpayers foot the bill for their maintenance.
Currently, the Forest Service has an $8 or $10 billion backload of maintenance money that's really needed to support all these roads.
Prior to the roadless rule, 380,000 miles of roads were built in national forests. When the roadless rule was first proposed, more than 1.5 million Americans voiced their support, and Furnish says it has survived many challenges since going into effect almost 20 years ago.
It's been litigated over and over and over again, and I might add, repeatedly in Alaska particularly, And yet here we are taking one last Hail Mary pass trying to remove these protections.
More than 400,000 people, as well as numerous tribal, governmental, business, and recreation groups have filed comments opposing exceptions from the roadless rule. For Public News Service, I'm Andrea Sears.
DNC Chair and former Secretary of Labor for the Obama administration, Tom Perez, helped negotiate a contract deal with the Unite Here Local 11, a union at Loyola Marymount University in Los Angeles, California, where tomorrow night's Democratic debate is set to take place. With that story and more, here's Lily Bolke with 2020 Talks.
Welcome to 2020 Talks, where we track the 2020 election process from the studios of KHOI in the heart of Iowa.
The Democratic debate scheduled for Thursday, December 19th in Los Angeles is on!
Unite Here Local 11's Susan Minato announced a tentative agreement for new contracts for food service workers at Loyola Marymount University in Los Angeles. Unite Here had planned to picket tomorrow, but DNC Chair Tom Perez helped negotiate a deal between the union and Sodexo, Loyola's food service provider, avoiding a picket line the presidential candidates had refused to cross, and a public relations disaster for the Democrats, including Perez, a former Secretary of Labor in the Obama administration.
This is not my first rodeo in labor negotiations.
Not only will the debate go on, but Loyola food service workers will get higher pay, lower health care costs, and increased job security. Here's Perez again in L.A. yesterday.
Every single Democrat running for president believes in the importance of collective bargaining, believes in the importance of the labor movement, understands that when the labor movement succeeds, the middle class succeeds.
In Washington today, the House of Representatives plans to vote on whether to impeach President Donald Trump on two articles, abuse of power and obstruction of Congress. Last night, there were rallies in cities across the country in support of impeachment. It's also International Migration Day, and immigration is a major issue in presidential politics these days. Mazahir Saleh immigrated to Iowa from Somalia, and she helped found the Center for Worker Justice of Eastern Iowa. Referring to the non-indigenous population.
The concept of America is like immigration. Everybody's been immigrant to this country. So it doesn't matter how did you get to this country. You should be given a chance to stay and live a better life.
Former Housing Secretary Julian Castro was the first Democratic candidate to come out with a plan for major immigration reform.
Crossing the border without permission under my administration, you would still be held accountable for that, but in a civil court, not a criminal court. And we would work so that undocumented immigrants are on a pathway to citizenship as long as they haven't committed a serious crime.
But yesterday, the House approved a $1.4 trillion government spending deal that, among other measures, continues funding for Trump's immigration policies, including the border wall. Chris is an Iowa resident and military veteran who supports the president in part for his stance on immigration.
The wall is a big, big important to me. Border security, I don't care if it's from the north or the south. Border security is a big deal.
Since taking office, President Trump's taken a number of steps to limit immigration, including a zero-tolerance policy at the southern border, which resulted in family separations, and a ban on travel from five Muslim-majority countries. From Pacifica Network and Public News Service, I'm Lily Bolke. Thanks for listening at pacificanetwork.org and publicnewsservice.org.
Gary Larson, creator of the comic strip The Far Side, launched an official website today, which will feature past comics, doodles from Larson's sketchbooks, and comments from Larson himself. Larson's publishers said the site would also periodically include new work by Larson. The Far Side ran in almost 1,900 daily papers from 1980 until 1995, when Larson decided to retire due to fatigue. He had been hesitant up until now about putting his work on the internet, mostly due to questions of copyright infringement. When Larson realized that his work was the subject of many fan-driven websites, he wrote an open letter asking that the sites be taken down, and most complied. In another letter written to launch the new webpage, Larson thanked his fans for their patience, apologizing for being, quote, late to the party, but I'm finally here and I could use a drink.
Yeah. You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, December 18th, 2019. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories and tips at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Dan Raphael. The producer is Nat Moon, and our engineer tonight is Althea Billings. The director of Evening News is also Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Erin J. Bernard.
And I'm Nat Moon. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO at 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, it's Voices from the Edge, progressive talk radio with a grassroots perspective, hosted by Joanne Hardesty. At 9, it's Press Watch, where Teresa Mitchell brings you news you're not supposed to know. At 9:30, it's Fight the Empire, where Per Fagerang connects history with current events. At 10, it's Flashpoints, investigative news with Dennis Bernstein. At 11, it's Between the Covers, featuring interviews with locally and nationally known authors. Then at 11:30, it's Express Yourself, hosted by G and featuring talented spoken word artists, rappers, poets, and singers from around the Portland area. KBOO is an independent, non-commercial, community radio station powered by our volunteers and our members. By making a donation through GiveGuide on kboo.fm/give, you're eligible for more than $4,000 of free and discounted products from your favorite Portland brands. If you'd like to become a member, go to kboo.fm or use our mobile app and click on Donate.
Stay tuned for Culture in Motion, coming up next.